Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Russia's Sputnik Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and Spanish National Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Youth activists demonstrated outside the European Commission after a new climate law was offset to 2050. Judges at the ICC ruled for an investigation into war crimes in Afghanistan. Luxembourg has become the first country in the world to offer free public transport. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The climate campaigner Greta Thunberg and other activists from across Europe have demonstrated outside the European Commission in Brussels. Well, the protest comes the day after the EU unveiled a new climate law that proposes making the bloc carbon neutral by the year 2050. The activists are calling for swifter action. Judges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague have ruled that prosecutors can open an investigation into alleged war crimes committed in Afghanistan. Well, the probe would examine the actions of the Taliban, Afghan forces, and U.S. troops. Well, the global court upheld an appeal against a previous decision to block the probe.
Luxembourg has become the first country in the world to offer free public transport. The aim is to cut down on pollution and traffic jams, but critics doubt whether the transport system is up to the job.
You just get on and off without buying a ticket. Ticket machines are being removed, counters closed, and inspectors given other jobs. The move is expected to cost some 41 million euros a year, paid for with tax receipts. As well as the 600,000 Luxembourgers, the hope is that more than 200,000 commuters from France, Belgium and Germany will leave their cars at home. Social and environmental factors may be driving the transport revolution, but there are also practical considerations. On weekdays, Luxembourg is choked by traffic jams. The Grand Duchy has one of the highest rates of car ownership in the world.
We cannot go on developing urban spaces the way we did in the last century. That has put us in a tight spot. Urban spaces everywhere are clogged up, and that includes Luxembourg.
Experts say free public transport is just a start.
Making it more accessible, make it faster, and so forth. On the other side, we have the negative incentives, making driving very challenging, making driving very expensive, eliminating parking spots.
Luxembourg is investing 600 euros per capita in rail infrastructure. In Germany, that figure is less than 70 euros per person.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. DW offers many special programs in English, which you can find at dw.com. Next, Sputnik Radio. George Galloway and Gayatri interviewed Professor Daniel Kovalik about the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, where the citizens are not risking everything to seek asylum in the U.S. Why is the U.S. crippling that country with sanctions? Will the imperial forces removing much of the left leadership in Latin America take over Venezuela and Nicaragua? Russia's Sputnik Radio.
Professor Dan Kovalik teaches at Pittsburgh School of Law, is a labor and human rights lawyer and an author. A lot of people, I suspect, like me, were heavily involved in Nicaragua solidarity in the 80s, but after the revolution fell, as it were, had to turn their attentions elsewhere and haven't really refocused. Tell us why people should.
Yes, well, as you know, in 1990, the Sandinistas stood for election. They were defeated, really under the threat of continued war by the United States that was supporting the Contras. And the people essentially capitulated and said, okay, we want the war to end. Sandinistas were voted out of power, and they stepped down. What began was 17 years of neoliberal policies in Nicaragua, which were devastating to the poor and working people. And finally, in 2006, the Sandinistas were reelected, which was a major blow to U.S. policy in Central America. And what they have done since that time is not given enough credit. Let me just throw out one statistic. The UN ranks Nicaragua now fifth in the world for gender equality.
Wow.
That's an amazing feat for a Central American country. Since the Sandinistas were reelected and took office in 2007, the economy has grown by almost 5% every year. Poverty has been reduced by around 40%. And now Nicaragua is nearly 100% food sovereign, meaning that they grow nearly all the food that they eat, and they're all now beginning to export food, including to Venezuela.
Venezuela, is that going to be visited on Nicaragua? Are they headed into the... Because what you've got now is more or less total war, short of actually firing missiles between the U.S. and Venezuela. Is that the direction that Nicaragua's now headed?
I fear that that is the case. In fact, late 2018, the U.S. Congress passed and Donald Trump signed into law what is called the NICA Act, which is a very punishing sanctions regime against Nicaragua, which cuts them off from almost all international financing. For example, from the IMF and the World Bank, financing the Sandinistas were using to reduce poverty, to build housing, to engage in other social programs. This is the same thing they're doing to Venezuela. And we know that they have been funding violent groups inside Nicaragua. In fact, funding reconstituted Contra groups in Nicaragua to try to challenge the Sandinistas, who will be up for election again in 2021.
How is Nicaragua's relations with its surrounding countries, the rest of Latin America?
Well, they've been good in many ways, but because of the U.S. isolation, a lot of countries have then followed suit mm-hmm. and isolated them as well. But what is undeniable is how stable Nicaragua is. In fact, the interesting thing is that while Trump talks about his concern for the migration from Central America to the United States, Nicaragua is not a Central American country that's producing many migrants to the United States because it is so stable.
Well, this is one of the factors. Obviously, there's lots of Venezuelan diaspora in the U.S., but less so from Nicaragua.
That's right. And certainly, there's very few that are trying to come in up Central America into the U.S. through the Mexican border, again, because of what the Sandinistas have done. And now, of course, the U.S. is risking that by trying to wreck their economy, as they have wrecked Venezuela's economy.
Their policy is going to produce refugees
heading north.
There have been many setbacks for people with your perspective on Latin America. Morales, you talked about, is now in exile, I think, in Argentina.
Yes.
The Venezuelans are under siege. The Nicaraguans soon to be under total siege, certainly under the early stages of a siege at the moment. There was a moment, we're old enough to remember when it was, I mean, we've seen all this musical chairs before, but we are certainly old enough to remember when Latin American social change was the hope of the world, and it's all being rolled back or in danger of being rolled back. How pessimistic are you about the coming years?
I'm not pessimistic, George. I'm optimistic. First of all, as a revolutionary, and I'm a revolutionary, I think you have to be optimistic, you know. But also you see that despite the setbacks, and there have been some major setbacks in Latin America, there have been some gains. The new elections in Argentina, for example, which got rid of a neoliberal government. You see the massive protests in Chile, which are challenging the neoliberal government there.
And with the victory in Mexico for your
victory in Mexico with AMLO. And frankly, Venezuela's victory in this last year, surviving this attempted coup, U.S.-backed coup of Juan Guaido.
Professor Dan Kovalik.
That interview was from George Galloway's program called Sputnik Orbiting the World, heard on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. In its 2019 report, Amnesty International has described Latin America as a region where citizens were attacked for protesting and defending human and environmental rights. 4 years after the assassination of indigenous Honduran environmentalist Berta Cáceres, the men who planned the hit remain free. The president of Argentina, Alberto Fernandez, strongly criticized the coup government in Bolivia. The Washington Post and MIT reviewed the overthrown election of Evo Morales and found that it was a legitimate victory. Colombian President Duque visited Trump to request more attacks against Venezuela. Tens of thousands joined exiled leader Carlos Puigdemont in Perpignan, France, to demonstrate for independence of Catalonia and the release of political prisoners. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Amnesty International has described Latin America in its 2019 annual report as a region where citizens were attacked for protesting and defending human and environmental rights, with governments often using measures in flagrant disregard for their obligations under domestic and international law. The Human Rights Organization also condemned the U.S. government's aggressive stances against migrants and asylum seekers. They called Donald Trump's asylum ban, issued in July, a death sentence for people seeking safety, especially for children fleeing situations of violence in Central America. Hundreds of Salvadorians and Hondurans have been sent to Guatemala to apply for asylum there instead, despite warnings from riot groups who say the Central American country is not equipped to handle asylum seekers.
4 years after the shooting death of Honduran environmentalist Berta Cáceres on March 2, 2016, those who planned the crime remain unpunished. This according to popular and indigenous organizations in the Central American nation. Today, those who carried out Cáceres' murder, five hitmen and two employees of the Company of Energy Developments, have been convicted, but this is only the first step towards justice. The family and followers of the Honduran indigenous leader have declared. According to the Qualified Observation Mission for the Berta Cáceres case, none of the suspects of the planning of the Cáceres crime, such as David Castillo, have been sentenced in spite of evidence. 4 years ago, Honduran activist Berta Cáceres was murdered. Even today, it is moving to hear this woman, who was serious and never gave up. May the young generation honor her legacy, and may her executioners no longer sleep peacefully.
The president of Argentina, Alberto Fernandez, strongly criticized the coup government in Bolivia, pointed out that the rule of law was violated with the ouster of Evo Morales. He demanded prompt democratization in the country with the full participation of the people. According to a report published by the Washington Post and carried out by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, Evo Morales won last year's election by more than 10 points without any fraud, the president wrote. In a series of tweets on his Twitter account, Fernandez said, "As I've always pointed out, in Bolivia, the rule of law was violated with the actions of the armed forces and sectors of the opposition to the then president and with the complicity of OAS, which had been called to ensure the full validity of democracy." The MIT study questions the report in which OAS stated that there were irregularities in the elections, which served as a justification for its Secretary General, Luis Almagro, to claim that there was fraud in favor of Morales.
Colombian President Iván Duque made a one-day visit to the U.S. Capitol this week with a full agenda that included meeting with Donald Trump to request more attacks against Venezuela. During his meeting with Trump, Duque immediately began by attacking Venezuela, stating that it's very important that we are stronger on sanctions against the neighboring nation, he said. Venezuelan Foreign Affairs Minister Jorge Arreaza responded that his country will ask the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to investigate Duque for asking a foreign nation to impose most unilateral sanctions against Venezuela. According to the government and international NGOs, the unilateral coercive measures that the U.S. has imposed on the Latin American nation since 2014 have caused losses of $120 billion and around 50,000 deaths. Tens of thousands of people gathered over the weekend in Perpignan, France, to demonstrate their support for the independence of Catalonia and to demand the release of Catalan political prisoners. One of the protagonists of this impressive rally was Catalonia's former president, Charles Puigdemont, who has been in exile for the past 10 years. "We will not stop, and they will not stop us. We do not have to wait for better times, because they are already here." And he added, "The Catalan Republic is a majority objective within Catalan society," referring to the Catalan independence referendum, which was held on October 1, 2017. Camin recalled that the vast majority of his countrymen and women voted for the right to self-determination and warned that their decision must be respected. "No one has given up. After so many years of exile and jail, we are stronger than ever," he said.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, and their podcast links did as well. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support it. Through PayPal, you can create a monthly subscription to help cover my expenses, like a listener northwest of London did. We will conclude with Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes produced an update on the hearing of Julian Assange in England. She included comments by Patrick Coburn and Julian's lawyers. El País uncovered the Spanish company that had installed cameras and microphones throughout the Ecuadorian embassy to record every conversation Julian had, including with his lawyers, and then delivered the material to U.S. intelligence services. Spanish National Radio.
Veteran British journalist Patrick Coburn and longtime war correspondent in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria recently commented that he and the other journalists in Iraq at the time did not believe the official story about the gunning down of two Reuters reporters and civilians in Baghdad. But Coburn writes, "We could not prove anything until WikiLeaks made public the film from the Apache helicopter, Collateral Murder. Viewing it still has the power to shock. The pilots are cock-a-hope as they hunt their prey, including people in a vehicle who stop to help the wounded, saying, 'Oh yeah, look at those dead bastards,' and 'Ha-ha, I hit them.' Anyone interested in why the U.S. failed in Iraq should have a look. The WikiLeaks revelations in 2010 and in 2016 are the present-day equivalent of the release by Daniel Ellsberg in 1971 of the Pentagon Papers, unmasking the true history of the U.S. engagement in the Vietnam War. They are, in fact, of even greater significance because they are far more wide-ranging and provide an entry point into the world as the U.S. government really sees it. The disclosures were probably the greatest journalistic scoop in history, and newspapers such as the New York Times recognized this by the vast space they gave to the revelations. Corroboration of their importance has been grimly confirmed by the rage of the U.S. security establishment and its overseas allies, and the furious determination with which they have pursued Assange, the co-founder of WikiLeaks. Daniel Ellsberg is rightly treated as a hero who revealed the truth about Vietnam, but Assange, whose actions were very similar to Ellsberg's, is held in Belmarsh High Security Prison. The extradition hearings, which concluded on Thursday, have themselves raised doubts on procedure and a fair trial. For one, the magistrate judge at the Woolwich Court decided to keep Assange isolated from his defense team, sitting in the dock, a glass box at the back of the courtroom surrounded by guards. That prevented Assange's defense lawyers from being able to see him and Assange from being able to communicate with them. In the United States, defendants sit with their counsel. Speaking to a reporter afterwards, one of Assange's lawyers, Jen Robinson.
As you've heard this afternoon, Mr. Assange is having significant difficulties in participating with these proceedings. He's unable to pass notes in a confidential and secure way to his legal team. He's unable to seek clarification from his legal team and give instructions during the course of the proceedings. And the judge has refused his ability to leave the dock to be able to participate properly. This is obviously raising serious concerns about his fair trial rights and his ability to properly participate and defend himself in these proceedings.
The current head of WikiLeaks, Kristin Hafferson, said,
Julian is not receiving a fair hearing. To start with, he can hardly and barely hear what's going on in the courtroom. He cannot communicate with his lawyers without being observed and overheard by officials from the State Department, from the embassy, and from the Eastern District Court of Virginia. So how can he actually have a fair opportunity? And he, as he said, when he was communicating, attempted to communicate with the judge, there's been enough spying on the communication between me and my lawyers. So this is unfair all the way through.
Let's take a minute to remember WikiLeaks gained worldwide attention in 2010 when it published a huge cache of classified material taken from American military computer systems, most of it about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
White House blasting the release of over 90,000 U.S. military records on the war in Afghanistan. This is the largest leak.
Well, this isn't a WikiLeak. This is a WikiTorrent.
The U.S. military's secret Afghanistan war logs provide the most revealing picture of the conflict so far.
The WikiLeaks website released nearly 400,000 secret U.S. files on the Iraq war late today. It was the largest leak of classified
from the biggest intelligence leak in history. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, in the eye of this diplomatic firestorm, with WikiLeaks revealing a directive from Clinton for U.S. diplomats at the United Nations to spy on their counterparts.
In 2016, WikiLeaks published stolen Democratic Party emails that damaged the presidential campaign of Hillary Clinton. According to special counsel Robert Mueller, Russian spies had hacked the party's computers, but Julian Assange denies any ties to Russian intelligence. Recently, it was revealed that a former Republican senator approached Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in 2017 to offer him an alleged deal offered by President Donald Trump, that if Assange could prove the Russians didn't hack the Democratic Party computers, no charges would be pressed against him. Assange did not accept the deal. While some news sources reported on Assange's fragile health during his captivity at the embassy, it has since been shown that he had not become a paranoid maniac, thinking that he was being spied on all the time. A Spanish company illegally recorded on audio and video every single move he made. A Spanish defense and security firm called Undercover Global, owned and managed by Spaniard David Morales, supposedly in charge of protecting the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where Assange had received asylum in 2012, carried out sophisticated and intrusive surveillance of Julian Assange. The covert monitoring allegedly began after David Morales returned from a Las Vegas security trade fair with a contract with Las Vegas Sands, the casino resort belonging to Sheldon Adelson, in July 2016. Thanks to an exposé by the daily El País, which had access to the testimonies and documents gathered by the whistleblower, the Spanish High Court began an investigation of the company in the autumn of 2019. The company not only filmed and recorded Assange, but every visitor he had, including his lawyers. From the autumn of 2017, the 24-hour live stream audio and video devices were placed inside the embassy and laser microphones from the outside. UC Global stored the information it gathered, including files from cell phones, profiles by nationality, Russians, Americans, Germans, etc., professions, and documents from attorneys, diplomats, journalists, doctors, and anyone. Documents and videos show that UC Global spied on Julian Assange's conversations with his lawyers at meetings where they were designing his defense strategy to avoid extradition to the United States. El País revealed Morales has allegedly delivered these and other conversations to U.S. intelligence services. The importance of this case to Assange's current extradition trial in England is clear. Assange's lawyers are arguing that the surveillance includes recordings of privileged conversations with his doctors and defense team and prove that he cannot expect a fair trial in the United States. Human rights barrister Jeffrey Robertson has called the surveillance recordings of his meetings with Assange and other lawyers an illegal breach of privacy, but also a potential lifeline to WikiLeaks' founder. Robertson told reporters in Australia, "I've been on secret police files before. I've been followed by police, secret police. I've been spied on in communist countries for the most part during the Cold War when I was defending dissidents. But I think this will probably prove to be a step too far." Robertson explained that the surveillance tapes could actually benefit Assange's case, and he referred to the 1970s case of the leaked Pentagon Papers, which revealed the nature and extent of the U.S. military tactics during the Vietnam War. He said, "It may well end Julian Assange's extradition ordeal, because certainly if he gets to America, this is how the Pentagon Papers ended, when they were found to have burgled the psychiatrist who was dealing with Daniel Ellsberg. They had to drop the case."
That report by Allison Hughes was from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website rtve.es and by podcast as REE. I highly recommend that you listen to the entire program that this was excerpted from. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast. Get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, although interference from electronic devices have made it much more difficult. If you use the internet, listening globally is even easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 23rd year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.